yet. We have Kirk with us, and Kirk, as we were talking through Scott at the during the commercial intermission, when you do multiple shows, it's kind of hard to remember exactly where you were on each show. So by way of recap, for those who listen to the Shabbat show that we do on Blog Talk Radio on Friday as the beginning of the Shabbat, as the sun is setting across America, we actually concluded our discussion of this thing that is called the Aaronic Blessing. It has, it's not the Aaronic Blessing, it's Yahweh's blessing to the children of Israel. That's a blessing that you brought up a number of weeks ago regarding what was said, so what is said so often at the conclusion of Christian church services. I've probably heard the pastor of a Christian church during the time I was a Christian years ago repeat it many hundreds of times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always may the Lord and it keep you and
bless you and
bless you. Yeah, bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you. And it goes on like that. And there's almost no correlation between what Yahweh said and what is being said. And, of course, the audience that it's being said to is the wrong audience.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think we concluded the body message. This is actually it's Bamidbar in Numbers, which means in the wilderness. I don't think we concluded it on this program. So let's do that today, and then we're going to return to the portion of questioning Paul that was dealing with the issue of circumcision and Paul's antagonism towards it compared to what Yahweh has to say regarding circumcision as the sign of the covenant. So just to bring our listeners up to speed, those particularly who haven't been with us over these past few weeks, let's bring it up to the point of light so that we know where we are in context. And it says, and Yahweh, he elected to speak the eternal word to influence Moshe, to approach by saying, speak, to prompt a decision to Aaron and to his sons, to draw near by communicating this demonstrative frame of reference. You should always bless, benefiting by lifting up in love, positively and eternally influencing, accordingly, the children of Yisrael, of those individuals who engage and endure with God, by literally saying to them, Yahweh, he wants to kneel down in love, to continually bless you, desiring to lift you up forever for your benefit. And he has decided to actually and continually focus upon you. Yahweh, he has chosen to always shine the light of his presence upon you. And he genuinely wants to be continuously generous, compassionate, and merciful to you. So those are the first six things that Yahweh wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
Is Aaron providing any of these things?
No, he hasn't got the capacity.
No. As a matter of fact, has Aaron even heard of these things at this point in time?
No, he's talking to Moshe, telling him
right.
to tell.
Exactly. And by the way, is this recorded in a in the Torah?
Yes.
What did Paul say about the Torah?
It was pornography.
Yeah. Said the Torah can't save you. And yet, didn't this just say that Yahweh wants to be generously compassionate and merciful to you?
Yes.
And so, Paul says the Torah can't save, and Yahweh is saying, what I want to do is save you. I want to be right. merciful to you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the two has to be lying, don't they?
Yeah, you pick them.
You pick them. So if you're a Christian and you have in your Bible, to use the pagan term,
mm-hmm.
a statement from Yahweh that says it's his desire to be merciful, and it's recorded in the Torah, and then you turn to your New Testament and you have Paul saying the Torah can't save and the Torah has been annulled, you've got a real problem, don't you?
I would think that's most serious of all.
So how do you resolve that problem if you're a Christian?
Well, you're going to have to look at it and see what he really said and make a choice, aren't you?
Yeah. Both can't be telling the truth, can they?
No, that's all of our choices.
One of the two is lying to you.
Right.
Now, who would you, do you think is wiser? If you had to evaluate the evidence and make a decision, who do you think is more credible? Yahweh, who is the creator of the universe, or Paul, who claims that he's speaking on behalf of this same God when he contradicted him?
Well, obviously it's Yahweh. I mean, he's proved himself constantly. But
right. And Paul claims that he is speaking on behalf of a God that he's contradicting?
Right.
I mean, you've got to be an absolute ignoramus to believe Paul. And I say that in a empathetic way, because I was one of those.
Mm-hmm.
You were too.
So were we all.
Yeah. Someone has pointed out to you, wait a minute. This man claims that he's speaking on behalf of a God that he's constantly contradicting and undermining. There's a 0% possibility that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And so you realize he wrote half the Christian New Testament, and he is solely responsible for the Christian church. And then all of a sudden you got nothing left of Christianity. It's gone. Because you got to toss him aside.
Yeah. And it's so when you wrote, put all this research together and questioning Paul, and then, of course, when you throw in the prophet, you know, after that, it's kind of like a case closed.
There's no wiggle room. Yeah. And what he's talking about is that I had written a 600-page book called Questioning Paul that was, and we've gone through it on this program not once but twice. We're going through it a second time because I wrote 600 pages based upon what Paul wrote in his letter to the Galatians, which was his foundational treatise, his first letter, and then compared that to what Yahweh had to say to repudiate Paul, to expose Paul as a liar. And it gradually snuck up on that. You know, it gave Paul the benefit of the doubt all the way to the point that Paul said that there were two covenants and that the covenant memorialized in the Torah enslaved and that it was with Hagar. And you get to that in the middle of Galatians and you go, oh, takes your breath away. And if you're a rational individual, it just literally takes your breath away that Paul would say that the covenant created and presented in the Torah was of Hagar and that it enslaves and that it had to be replaced by a new covenant. If that doesn't take your breath away, then maybe you've already lost your soul. So, that was the first version. The second version of it, I began it by citing from this very prophet that you have mentioned. His name is Chabaouk. It means embrace this. Yeah, you'll find his name as Habachuk in in the pagan book called your Bible. There Yahweh calls out Paul by name.
Mm-hmm.
He delineates the time that he would arrive, which was 666 years after this prophecy was being foretold. It tells us every aspect of his character and who his audience would be.
Go a little slower. 666 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Chabaouk was committed to writing exactly 666 years before Paul wrote the letter to the Galatians.
That's a pretty good symbol right there.
Yep. Indeed. And he says it's his name will be Shaul, which was Paul's given name. He admits it. And that his fulcrum argument would be against circumcision. And that he would be enormously egotistical, which is, if you read Paul's letters, he's just been over-the-top egotistical. As a matter of fact, Paul says that he's so egotistical that he had to be demon-possessed to be controlled. And read that. It's in 2 Corinthians for you Christians out there. Goes on and on to identify his audience being Gentiles and that he would try to undermine and overturn Yahweh's responsibilities and Yahweh's commitment to the terms and conditions of the covenant. And when you read it, there's only one person in all human history that it can be addressing, and it's Paul, the founder of the religion of Christianity, an author of half of its New Testament. And at that point, you say, wow, God warned us specifically about this man. And yet Christians carry around in their Bibles the very evidence that undermines the entirety of their New Testament and the founder of their religion, and they're clueless about it.
Well, I didn't understand if... See, I thought you could throw Paul out and keep Christianity. You can't.
You can't, no.
You can't.
No.
And secondly, if you accept him, then why are you carrying around the Torah to begin with, the Old Testament?
Right. Why are you? Let's just get rid of it.
Yeah, it's one of them got to go.
Yeah, one of them's got to go. It's either the New Testament has to go or what you would call the Old Testament has to go. One of the two has to go. They are irreconcilable. The only thing that is reconcilable about them is Yosha's words as correctly presented in the first four books, and particularly in Matanyah and secondarily in Yahuchanan. But other than Yosha's words as they are recorded there and in the revelation of Yahuchanan, the rest of it has to go. Or you've got to get rid of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms because they say the opposite of one another.
Yes. I never realized it was that bad until the last number of years when it was really... There's nothing to save in it other than what you said, other than when he's quoting, when Yosha is quoting the Torah, then obviously that's good.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, what Yosha said, so long as it was properly remembered, properly translated from Hebrew to Greek, properly translated from Greek to English, properly maintained in Greek prior to being translated into English, none of which happened, by the way, with horrible translations from Hebrew to Greek, and very poorly maintained in Greek. As a matter of fact, we know, having found now 70 pre-Constantine manuscripts of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, that there are more variations between them and between the Nestle Allen, which is used today as the basis of most English translations, although they were mostly based on the fraud known as the Textus Receptus, that there's more variations than there are words. So very poorly maintained. And in fact, purposefully and deliberately copy edited.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the level of trust that you can place and anything in the Christian New Testament. Well, everything of Paul you got to throw out. And the rest of it, it's only if it was properly translated, properly maintained, and properly translated a second time. And not much of that going on.
No.
So, as you say, if Yosha is citing something that we can research in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, then that you can trust, because guess what? It's in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. Yeah. So there's two things here that are interesting, is that Yahweh has chosen to always shine the light of his presence upon us, and that he always wants to be generous and merciful to us. And both of those are in conflict with Pauline testimony, because didn't Paul express Yosha as his encounter, which was actually with Satan, on the road to Damascus as a flashing light that blinded him temporarily? Yeah, brutalized him and blinded him. Yeah. Do you find that Yahweh is saying he wants to shine his light on us? This is in the midst of a blessing. Would him shining his light on us, blinding us, be a blessing?
Well, I fail to see how it could possibly be anything positive about it. I mean, it took him like a couple of weeks to recover, didn't it?
Yeah, and absolutely. And by the way, he wrote this in the imperfect, which means this is an ongoing effect. This is not a flash on, flash off. This is ongoing, and so that Paul's testimony of what he encountered and what Yana was saying here, they're the opposite of one another.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's followed by Yahweh being merciful. Do you know that chanan, the Hebrew word for mercy, is used far more in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms than is the Christian concept of grace, which is based on the gratia, which are the Roman versions of the charities, the Greek gods of romance and merriment and lasciviousness.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you were to extrapolate from the Roman gratia, the cute little pagan goddesses, which are always depicted naked, and sever that relationship and just get and pretend that grace had nothing to do with the gratia, then this idea that the Torah has been annulled because it was mean and it's been replaced by this gospel of grace, in reality, the presentation of chanan, of mercy in the Torah, is much greater than the presentation of grace in the Christian New Testament.
Absolutely.
So, and, so if you're looking for mercy, you should really turn to the Torah.
I would think.
Not to mention the fact that the Torah is from Yahweh and the Christian New Testament is from men.
And so, what did he say to Nicodemus?
Yeah, what's wrong with you? You're supposed to be a teacher of the Torah, and yet you don't know this stuff?
Well, he also said, you know, trust my word with the men.
Oh, yeah, that's more accurate. Yeah, that actually precedes this the discussion here with, I think it actually precedes that. You should just say, yeah, I don't trust the my testimony to men. Absolutely. Right there in Yahu Kanan, as we transition from 2 to 3, he says, I don't trust my witness to men because I know the nature of men. And somebody might scream and say, well, you know, that's not true because, you know, he trusted Moshe to write down the Torah, and he trusted Isaiah and David to write down, you know, the Psalms and you know, prophets, prophecy. No, he spoke right through them.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't relying. There is, Moses is as important to the Torah as a tape recorder is to a president's speech.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they are.
That's fair.
Yeah. You know, it's like a president of a company dictating a letter back in the time that dictation was vogue, before we had word processors and we typed our own, and then that person typing what the individual said.
Yeah, I'm not quite there yet.
you who are technologically handicapped.
I am so handicapped. I truly am.
So now we have four of the things that Yahweh wants to give us. He wants to lift us up in love, get down on his knees to lift us up in love. He wants to pay attention to us like a parent focuses on their children. He wants the light of his presence to shine upon us, which is the way, by the way, that he's merciful, because where there is light, there is no darkness. And as a result, he is going to be forever merciful to us. We have now four of the six things that he's offering. Let's just take a quick pause here. We've got Roland calling in from Texas, who has a related question on the Torah. Hello, Roland.
Good morning, Yada. And good morning, Kurt. I want to thank y'all for your time. I've been following you since 2008. I'm here in Austin, Texas, and
uh-huh.
I was, you know, going through the church thing, and but as you know, I wasn't getting the results that I was expecting, and that's how I wound up, you know, finding you. And right now, I'm just facing a lot of...
Hang on, Roland. We'll return to you right after the commercial break. But before we do, Roland's not following me. He's trying to follow Yahweh. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I have a conversation here with Roland, and Roland was... I just wanted to correct Roland that you know, I don't have any followers. Kirk doesn't either.
No.
I mean, all we do is do our best to share with people who are interested what Yahweh had to say, and we... follow in Yosha's footsteps and attempt to the best that we can to follow along Yahweh's guidance.
Yes, I mean, well, I'm trusting and believing in our Father Yahweh in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And since it's been going on for like 30 years, I'm being like slandered and just tormented and just, you know, I'm run off jobs and just facing all type of, even my life being attempted against, and just people, most of these people out here, they know that, and instead of me getting any kind of support, they just, you know, there's no support whatsoever. And I've, you know, been trying to contact, you know, different, those Christian, you know, Vivian and all them throughout the years since 96. And so now it's to where God, I'm trusting him, you know, to protect my life and everything.
Roland, what I think you need to do here is just to stop antagonizing people who you have no hope whatsoever of reaching. I know that one of the things that we all do as when we become members of Yahweh's family is we become disgusted by those who had misled us for so many years, and we also have at the same time this desire to share, to awaken those who have been misled by Christianity. And so we want to share what we have come to know and what we have learned. And what you find is that if you do that, what you end up doing is just making enemies. And the reason is that, TBN, isn't going to listen to what you have to say. Just never going to happen. CBN or any of those Christian organizations, they don't want to hear what you have to say. As a matter of fact, once I came to know that Paul was a false prophet, I had a relationship with, in terms of did radio shows with Pat Robertson. But once I came to know that Paul was a false prophet, man, they didn't want to hear that. And so it is just what you ought to expect is that family, friends, business associates, if you tell them that their religion is wrong, they're going to push back.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I have found, and I think Kirk's probably found the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Is that if somebody is open to knowing the truth, be prepared to tell them. But if they're not open to it, it's better off. You're better off and they're better off. Everyone's better off if you say nothing. So that way people wouldn't be in opposition to you, wouldn't get pushback at work. And now there are some exceptions, like, for example, you're going to take a Pesach off. It will occur here in less than 2 weeks. You're going to take the day off for Pesach and Matzah, to celebrate Pesach and Matzah. You're going to take a day off work. And but I just wouldn't make a big deal as to why you're taking a day off work. You know, so you know, you're not going to do your ordinary job on the Shabbat, and others will. To say that you're Torah observant is a fine thing to do, but you need to be you need to realize that people who are antagonistic to what God has to say are going to push back when they hear someone talk about him. You know, here we are in a program where people can choose to listen or not listen. You know, Christians are not going to listen. Those who are questioning Christianity will listen. So the program is designed for those who are questioning their religion. Just as Prophet of Doom wasn't written for a fundamentalist Muslim, there's nothing you can say to a fundamentalist Muslim that's going to help them. They're beyond salvation. They're not open to evidence and reason. But a person who is questioning their religion, the book and program are perfect for them. So what I think I would do is not try to reach out to Christian organizations, not try to save Christians, but simply grow yourself, and as you grow, get to a position where when somebody gives you the opportunity to share the truth, you can do so. And the person who's open to the truth is not going to respond angrily to you when you share it with them. Kirk, is that your experience?
It's been absolutely my experience. I've probably turned off more people trying to tell them something because I'm like everybody else. I rushed out and, you know what Yahweh's name really is? I mean, you know what God's name is? And on and on. And they're just shut down like...
Absolutely.
And these are people that like me. And they just...
Shut down. Shut down, shut you off, turned you off. You know, when, as I said, I was a very close friend with Jerry Falwell back in my my Christian days. And when I began to learn the truth, long before I found out that Falwell was a false prophet, as I was just learning it, what God's name was and how he wants us to use it. And these invitations seven times a year to meet with him and the mikre. And the fact that the Christmas celebrations of Sunday and at Easter and Christmas are purely pagan and that there's no basis for Jesus or Christ. And when I first learned that and shared that with Jerry Falwell, his response was unequivocal. I don't want to hear that. Yeah, what you're saying is true. But I don't want to be associated with it, because if I were to say any of those things, I'd have no one sitting in my pews. The envelopes that show up that fund Liberty University would cease to arrive in the mail. And I'd be labeled a kook. And if you continue to say it, they're going to label you a kook, just as they're doing to you, Roland. And yeah. So that's the nature of religion. They're going, and politics, too. They're going to push back at you. It was Kirk's experience. It's my experience. It was, by the way, Yosha's experience. When Yosha spoke to the rabbis and to the scribes and to the Sadducees, who were the liberal political leaders, when he spoke to them, did they say, oh, wow, this is so nice of you to share the truth with us. We embrace it. We admit that we were wrong. We're so pleased that you've come to share the truth with us. Let's see how we can break bread together and celebrate the truth. No, what did they do? They pushed him away and sought to have him killed. Roland, you sound like a nice guy, but my guess is that you can't present Yahweh's testimony as effectively as could Yosha. I know I can't. And look what they did to him. I don't think we should expect any different. So anyway, that's my my thoughts. Roland, is that continue to grow by reading what Yahweh had to say, study, enjoy your conversations with him. Know that he is your father, he is your protector. He cares about you. He is doing everything that he promised here when you came to embrace the terms and conditions of the covenant and became a member of his family. Then this particular blessing is for you. Yahweh wants to lift you up. Let him do it. He wants to pay attention to you. Enjoy it. He wants to make the light of his very presence shine upon you, making you perfect in his eyes. And he wants to be merciful to you. He wants to treat you better than anyone has ever treated you in the past. These things are all for you. Is that helpful, Roland?
Yes, very much. Yes.
All right. And, you know, that's not the end of what Yahweh had to say. He also said that he wants to lift us up. The Hebrew word is nasa pane'el. He wants to lift us up to the very presence of God. Pane means presence. El is the Hebrew word for Yahweh's title as God. And nasa means to lift up.
Right.
So Yahweh, his desire is to actually lift you up. So it's peoples and to his presence. And Roland, you know, it's the people who are religious, Christians. Their desire, when you embrace Yahweh's testimony, their desire is to kick you down and kick you out. Yahweh's desire is to lift you up. You know, God's a lot more influential than our humans. So let him lift you up. And he has chosen to place upon you, moving towards you in the name and cause of reconciliation. What he's saying there is that you would think that after saying that I'm going to get down on my knees to lift you up in love, that to support you, that I'm going to pay attention to you, that I'm going to have the light of my presence shine upon you, that I'm going to be merciful to you, that I want to lift you right into my presence, that there would be a crescendo that would be far greater than reconcile. You would think at that point you're going to read the word, you know, particularly if you came out of Christianity, salvation, and I'm going to save you. But that's the problem of Christianity. It's focused on salvation. Shalom, reconciliation, is focused on relationship. Once you're in a relationship with Yahweh through his covenant, you are saved. If you're not in the covenant, you aren't saved. And so the moment Yahweh reconciles his covenant relationship with you, you have all of the benefits of the covenant, which are to be immortal, to be perfect, to be adopted into his family, to be empowered, and to be enriched. And so by saying the crescendo here, the sixth of these seven things, which is really the crescendo because the seventh is our response, that by stating reconciliation as the crescendo, as the exclamation point on these, he's bringing our attention right back to the fact that what he wants is for us to be part of a reconciled relationship. And that's what shalom means. Roland, Scott and I have been talking during the break, and we're going to devote an entire hour in our program, probably tomorrow, on the idea of who you should be sharing the truth with and then when you share publicly. And we'll devote an entire hour to that. What I would like to do is to conclude this marvelous blessing that Yahweh is offering, since your call is really fixated, focused right on what Yahweh wishes to do on our behalf. My guess, Kirk, is that you've looked at the word Nasa, that Yahweh wants to lift us up into his presence, and you've got a pictorial representation of what Nasa means.
Yeah, the Nasa, of course, is the Nun, the Shin, and the Aleph, and the Nun, of course, is the inheritance, the family, the seed, not the seed per se, but the sperm.
Right.
And then the Shin.
A child of an inheritance.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if you're going to be lifted up in Yahweh's presence, you need to be a child with an inheritance.
Yes.
You need to be part of the covenant.
So you're inheriting all that he has to give. And then then of course, the Shin is the nourishment, the teeth,
the word.
Then the, right.
Spoken word. Spoken word of Yahweh.
Uh-huh. And then the A, of course, is the Aleph, and that's the Yahweh, or the leader, the authority that can make all this happen.
The one with the power and ability.
Power to do the work.
Yeah, to lead and
to do the lifting.
Right. Yeah, to lead and protect. That's what, and see, he wishes to lift us up as his children into his presence. And the Aleph said that he has the power and authority to do so for those who listen to what he has to say and thereby become children of inheritance. That's what Nasa means pictorially.
Mm-hmm.
So it tells you who is being lifted up into his presence, doesn't it?
Right, the inherited, those that are going to inherit it.
Yeah, and then it says that he has chosen to place upon you, caring for you, moving towards you in the name and cause of reconciliation.
Mm-hmm.
Have you taken a whack at reconciliation, shalom?
Pardon me. Shalom, of course, is the, once again, we find the teeth, the nourishment, the SH sound.
Right, the nourishment word. Of the word.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, and the promised word. And the lamb, the next letter is the lamb, the L sound, and that's, mm-hmm. of course, is given direction, is teaching, is protection, is all the things that you would think of with someone with a staff protecting the sheep and guiding the sheep.
Yeah, it's a shepherd's staff, so it's the one who protects, and the shepherd's staff is used to rescue sheep and to protect sheep. It's used as a walking stick when you're walking with the sheep. It's used to lead the sheep to nourishment and safety and to pasture, right?
Mm-hmm.
Marvelous.
Yeah, pretty straightforward.
Marvelous, marvelous symbol of to have that be part of the word for reconciliation, shalom. So the word of Yahweh, which is nourishing, followed by the leadership of a shepherd and the protection and caring of a shepherd.
Right. And then the third letter, of course, is the mem, which is like waves of water. It's, we use it as an M or a short version of it as an M.
Actually, there's a third letter. There are four letters in shalom.
What did I miss?
Yeah, what you're missing.
Oh, now the The O-W sound. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's right. No, it's easy to miss because 99.9% of Christian lexicons don't tell you what letter the O comes from, and so they transliterate it without the W. But the W is there.
Yeah, the W. Exactly. So.
Yeah.
And of course,
and the W is cleansing waters, isn't it? Source of life and source of. Of cleansing is the symbol in this, and the symbolizes with the Ruach Kodesh, and the Ruach has waters in her name as well.
Right. So pretty to restore, to replace, to providing everything that's needed to make someone whole and complete would be a good definition.
Yeah, and with the wall conveying to be protected and to be enriched, to be enlarged, to be added to. Yeah, to increase us. That's the word picture of reconciliation. And so those are the six things. And then Yahweh says, as a result of these six things, because it's always six plus one, as a result of that, what is it that we, as the children of Yisrael, are going to want?
We're going to want those five benefits.
And we're going to want to put his personal and proper name
personal
upon
name,
us.
Yeah, be part of his family and be claimed by him, and you claim the name, just like a name, like when you marry.
You know, what I think is what he said, the big picture is we're all going to bear Yahweh's name because he's our father. You know, you inherit your father's name. But I think there's something also subtle being conveyed here. Remember, this is for the children of Yisrael?
Uh-huh.
I don't think the children of Yisrael will be called the children of Yisrael. I think they're simply going to be called Yahuda.
Yeah.
Related to Yah. And so as Yahweh uses the term where he says when he returns, he's going to reconcile his relationship with Yisrael and with Yahuda.
Right.
We're all going to become, the children of the covenant are going to become Yahuda and Yahudim.
That's good.